Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Annie Watson, and welcome back to another episode of R is for Rare. I usually don't upload two episodes in one day, but I'm uploading this episode today as well with my episode with Dr. Howard Berman, because today is Cystinosis Awareness Day. And my episode today is with Ashley Avedini, who is a young woman living with cystinosis. Cystinosis is a rare genetic disorder that is a metabolic disorder. So a lot of patients suffer different types of kidney issues, have to get kidney transplants. But like Ashley will say in the interview, it affects people in different ways. And actually, she and her sister both have cystinosis. So Ashley and I got to talk a little bit about sisterhood. My sister doesn't have narcolepsy, but she and I have bonded over my narcolepsy and just like the idea of sisterhood altogether. We talk about that. We talk about family dynamics with the genetic disorder, because that can sometimes be, that can just be an interesting thing to look into with a genetic disorder. And it's a recessive genetic disorder. So both parents have to carry the recessive gene of having cystinosis for a child to potentially have it. So yeah, she talks all about it. We talk a little bit about like what awareness means for her. And yeah, I'm so incredibly happy to have worked with Ashley through the Cystinosis Research Network for bringing today's episode. This isn't like sponsored by them, but they're the reason this episode is happening, because they reached out to me and I got connected with Ashley. So I will be tagging the Cystinosis Research Network and linking their Instagram in the show notes below. They do some amazing things, and they definitely, I think, have a lot of things in store for the day today. So make sure you're checking their Instagram as well. And yeah, be sure you keep listening for the rest of the episode. But before we get into it, be sure to subscribe to R is for Rare on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And be sure to follow me on Instagram at R is for Rare Podcast. Without further ado, let's get into the interview with Ashley. Hi, Ashley. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited to hear all about cystinosis today, because I don't know anything about it. So this is kind of, I'm learning with the listeners. So Ashley, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, what you're doing with your life right now, your connection to the rare disease, and a fun fact about yourself.
Yeah. My name is Ashley. I live in Wichita, Kansas. I do social media. That's my jam. So I have a social media agency, and I primarily deal with restaurants. I really like food marketing. I think that's really kind of fun to advertise. So yeah, that's kind of my jam. I work from home. And then with cystinosis, I was diagnosed at 6 months. My sister actually has it as well, and she's a little older. And so when she was diagnosed, they knew to test me. And yeah, that's my role with cystinosis. I had a kidney transplant 10 years ago. And since then, I've been doing fairly well. And then fun fact, I have a one-eyed shih tzu.
is it just like a hole where an eye should be, or is it like covered up?
It's like kind of covered up. It's like, she has kind of like very large lashes, so you can't really like, it's not like, wow, what a weird situation, but like, yeah, I don't know.
That's fun interesting. Fact. That's interesting. And has your dog always been
like that? I shouldn't say that fact, because then I have to like say the story. But no, she got in a fight.
Oh.
But you should see the other dog. Just kidding. They're fine. For real.
Yeah. I know people who have dogs with like two different colored eyes, but I've never heard the one eye. I've never heard the one eyed.
It's odd. When we went to the vet, they were oddly very chill, and they're like, yeah, this happens a lot. I'm like, okay.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, that's reassuring.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so, I've never heard that before. That's awesome. What's your dog's name?
Kiwi.
Oh, that's so cute. love dogs.
What kind of dogs do you have?
I have a Westie. His name is Milo.
Oh, so cute. I have a Shih Tzu, so it's like kind of similar.
Yeah, I'm a small dog person. I was at a friend's house over the weekend, And they have a big dog, and I was just like, I can't do big dogs.
I get a little overwhelmed. I don't know how to play with them.
Yeah, because you want to, like, with my dog, I'm like, it's easier to, like, play with him and, like, not like wrestle with him, but like play tug of war with the ball, and it's just like easier to play with him, and like I feel like I'm not like trampling, like having to like walk over like this 170 pound dog.
I feel like I'd be afraid to like accidentally get bitten by an actual large dog.
Yeah, like, that too.
My dog has like 3 teeth, like it's fine.
yeah small dogs like, usually don't do much harm, neither do big dogs, but like more intimidating
for sure.
Anyways, so Ashley, can you tell us a little bit about what cystinosis is, because this episode is part of the cystinosis awareness day, which is on Saturday, May 7th, so 2 days, bless you, so 2 days after this episode comes out. So can you tell us a little bit about what the disease actually is?
I have like allergies all of a sudden.
Oh, bless you.
It's random. Cystinosis, it's interesting because it like manifests differently in different people, but it's a metabolic disorder. And me and my sister, for example, we were able to get medicine that kind of prolongs the worsening of the disease. So that's why I say there's like different severities of it. Some people have like muscle waste, you know, problems swallowing, stuff like that. I haven't luckily experienced that. I just have had a kidney transplant, and that's like the main thing that people experience. A lot of people with cystinosis, the majority have to have a kidney transplant quite young. And it is getting like older and older that people are getting it on average. Like just for example, I mean, you know, when we were children, it was like, man, you had to have a kidney transplant like when you were a young child. And granted, some young children have to have transplants, but, you know, there are people that are more like later in adulthood. So it's mainly kidneys that it manifests. Some people have like liver issues, but it's mainly muscle wasting and kidney like issues is kind of my understanding of it.
And it's genetic, right?
Yeah, it's the recessive gene of both your parents. So like my mom's recessive gene and my dad's recessive gene. And it's something I believe now if they know you're like, they know they can test for it. But like you have to know, I think, to test for that when you're doing like gene markups or whatever. But yeah, like they never had kidney issues. And we didn't realize we had it until we kind of went through this long process.
Yeah. So speaking of that, like what does your diagnosis story look like? Cause I feel like with some of these genetic disorders, they're usually diagnosed pretty young. And also with like liver and kidney issues, I also feel like those are pretty like younger diagnosis ages. So tell us a little bit about your diagnosis story.
Yeah. I mean, it really helped that my older sister, they knew to test for a lot of things when she was a little older. And so it's more kind of like her story, because like, I didn't really have any symptoms when they tested me at 6 months. So they tested her at 18 months. And I think this is similar for a lot of the people, but it looks like, I mean, they lose a lot of weight. They're very thirsty. You know, they don't necessarily eat that much, like, and they don't process foods well. So they lose a lot of waste. They lose a lot of weight. And I think sometimes people think it's diabetes. And so they were testing for diabetes, but it didn't seem like it was it. And I mean, I remember my sister had to go through quite a few rounds of testing. And it was testing that at the time took a long time to get the results. And so she would be tested for a few things, and then they would come back no. And then we would have to be tested. She would have to be tested for more things, and it would just be a long process. Mm-hmm. But she was diagnosed at 18 months. And then when I was 6 months, they diagnosed me. And that's pretty young still. Like, you know, most people are lucky to be diagnosed that young, especially at 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems like a pretty, because that way you can kind of bring in like not preventative treatments, but like ways to like you said, like make sure that the worsening of the disease happens over a longer period of time.
Yeah, because I mean, medicine really does play a big part, at least from my experience. I don't know what it would be like if I didn't have medicine. So yeah, I mean, it's good that they were able to like help us get the medicine and the access to medicine that early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. And also, like, how has that, how was it like having the same condition as your sister? Because I have yet to interview people who have siblings with the same condition. So like, what was that type of dynamic like growing up, and what is that like now as you are both adults and doing your own thing in the world? Like, how is that dynamic like help with your relationship with your sister?
I feel like it's interesting because I feel like we both kind of interpreted the situation and became like developed personalities almost completely opposite because of it. Like she actually helps people with, she's like a transplant coordinator.
Okay.
And she helps people with like finances, and she's very like helpful with insurance and stuff like that. And I kind of like went the other way in the sense that like, I don't like dealing with health stuff. It's almost a little traumatic, and it's like, I'm almost like, I don't know how to describe it. I think it helped strengthen our personalities that were also a little different. Like, I feel like I'm extremely vulnerable with people. I usually lead with like a lot of the experiences I've had, and I've realized like it humanizes me. And like, you know, when people see that I've struggled something, maybe they have a different perspective of me, of like, you know, than what they first see me. And my sister's more like analytical, and she doesn't necessarily lead with that. So yeah, I think it's interesting. It's like, you know, when someone like you and your sisters or your siblings, like you all interpret your family dynamic in such a different way, mm-hmm. You know, like it's interesting to think about it, but it's good to have somebody, because like, who else knows my struggles more than my sister? You know, and we joke that she's probably definitely a lot more positive than I am. And I am like kind of the Debbie Downer of the family, but it's also, I'm kind of just like comical. Like, I'm usually pretty cynical in my sense of humor, so it comes off a little dark, I think. But like, yeah, it's interesting. My sister is very positive, and so I try to go to her when I'm needing positivity, because sometimes I'll be like a little dark or pessimistic, mm-hmm. You know, which becomes, mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense. Like we all have our moments.
Mm-hmm. And, how is that, like, I don't know, I just find that interesting, like, that, because, like, I have an older sister, but she doesn't have narcolepsy like I do, so it's been interesting to see how she and I get closer, like, as I get older, and that's just, like, the sister bond, like, just forming as we get older, but that's so interesting, like, that you grow up with your older sister, and, like, you have the same condition. Like, did you guys go to, like, you just go to appointments together? Like, how did, like, that?
I mean, I think we did a little bit as children. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to remember.
Yeah, I just, like, find that fascinating. It's like, yeah, like, we're going to treat Ashley today, and then, what's your sister's name?
Allison.
It was like, we're going to treat Allison today, too. Like, I just find that interesting. Like, we're just, like, together.
It is funny. And then like, if you think about it, like in a lot of families, you know, if there's a big family, especially, and there's one kid that's like, has an issue, it makes that kid feel so out of it. But mm-hmm. like, if the other kid has the same issue, they don't feel like it's almost like you can't play victim, because it's like, there's, you know what I mean? It's like, well, she's just like you. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah.
I feel like if you have a chronic illness, there's a tendency for the family members to baby you, because like, makes sense, right? Like, you feel bad for your kid that's going yeah. through something, you know, and almost to the point that you're like disabling them. And it's like, my family definitely did not do that. I think it helped that there was like two of us, you know, so they could be like, well, the other, you know, you guys are fine. So I don't know, but yeah, that is like, interesting.
Yeah, like almost like keeping it in check, like making sure they aren't like getting like too like you said, like almost like not like babying, but there's no other word to put it, like, because it can it's like you almost like putting it in check because there's two of you.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put that.
Mm-hmm. When did you first encounter the rare disease community, and like, what do you love about it from your exposure with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in some of the like support groups when we were really young. And at the time, honestly, it was kind of sad because it's like, I don't know how to describe it. There weren't a lot of people doing well with my disease back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I think it was almost hard to go to these events because it was like, I was comparing myself to something that might not happen. And I think things have gotten a lot better in my community. Like when I go to events, it's people, first of all, people are doing better, which is helpful. Like overall, people are just living a lot longer and healthier. So I think that's like beneficial to everybody, but like, it's nice going to these groups because like, I think a lot of times you feel so ostracized, but like you always need a support group, whoever that is. Like, you know, if you have narcolepsy, I'm sure it's great to be with people that have that same struggle, you know, because most people probably don't understand. Like, I know a little bit about narcolepsy, like, mm-hmm. you know, so yeah, I mean, I think having, being around with people who have the very same specific disorder, like you can talk about things. And, you know, I feel like I learned a lot about certain medicines because I asked people and because I was like around those kind of groups, mm-hmm. you know? So yeah. It's almost like I learned a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And how is the like life expectancy of people with cystinosis? Like, how is it now? And how has it changed since you've like been around this community?
I mean, it's kind of vague, honestly, right now. It used to be like, if you search the internet, it would be like, you're going to die when you're 10 kind of thing. I mean, it was very depressing. And I mean, I think the doctors just didn't have the answers, frankly, like they didn't know. But I mean, they wanted to let our parents know that there was a very high probability we wouldn't like live a normal life, or we wouldn't live to be like, I don't know how they put it, but like functional adults kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I do think like age expectancy, it's really like, well, we'll see. Cause honestly, it sounds weird, but I mean, like me and my sister, for example, and the people in that time, we were on an NIH study and we were the first people of its kind to like be able to start the medicine. And so we really don't know the life expectancy, like who's the oldest person. I mean, there might be somebody in their 50s or a few people in their 40s that are doing okay. Maybe it's hard to say, you know what I mean? Like, there's people doing really well though. And there's a lot of unknowns. Cause like this is getting into like a detailed conversation now, but like, for example, kidney transplants, they have really like kind of sad statistics on the average expectancy for a kidney transplant. But like most people that have kidney transplants are really old and like they're just not going to live much longer, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of hope and I think like optimism that we just truly don't know like what the age expectancy is going to be with these people of with these group of like people with medicine, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long answer.
But. No, I understand. And also like, how does that make you feel with all of the like unknowns about, cause a lot of these rare conditions, there's just a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of them that aren't necessarily like cures and stuff like that. Like, how does that, cause I know I hate the unknown, but I don't know. It all depends on the person. So how does that like almost like uncertainty, like how does that, like, how do you like react knowing that?
I mean, it's interesting because I feel like I hate planning things. I hate scheduling things. And like, I hate commitment. And I think that's because a lot of my disease, it's like, I crave for the freedom that I can have. But how has that affected me? I mean, it's been hard. I mean, I think being a business owner, it's hard because like, I mean, really just recently I was able to be a business owner with like Affordable Care Act. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what was the question?
How do you feel knowing that like there's a lot of unknowns?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like a lot of it is hard because like they give you advice on, for example, investments, but like they don't, like when you go to somebody and I'm just like, hey, like, I don't know, maybe I'll live really long. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and they're just like, who are you? And it's like, well, like, how do you plan for something that you really just don't know? So it's like, do I have a regular 401k? I don't know. Cause it's like in my family, they think that's like pessimistic to bring it up. But like a lot of people that I see are just not doing so well. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of uncertainty. And I mean, it's pretty frustrating, you know. I think in a way, maybe it's good to know that, like, this is my, like, this is kind of my circumstance to plan around. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure there's positives to it, you know?
Yeah. Like this would be the thing that, like, you have to worry about, like, as you get older, basically.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's like with a chronic illness, like, you have a sense of, like, how, you know, how, like, how, I don't want to say your demise, but like how you're going to age into, or how your life's going to be. And I mean, we really have no idea. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, I say this joke and I think it's pretty funny, but it's pretty dark. Like, my transplant surgeon was like, oh, well, I mean, I gave a healthy transplant to somebody who is just your age. They died the next year in a car accident. I'm like, cool. Like, that's not funny. And that's a horrible thing to say, but it's like funny that this, like, that doctors have such bedside manner. But like, the point being, like, no one knows what their life is going to be like, you know what I mean? Like, like, even, you know, if you're doing well, you think you have a sense of, like, so I think maybe it just teaches you that we have no idea of life.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, nothing's guaranteed, whether we have something or we don't. Like, nothing's really guaranteed, which can be taken either direction, can be quite terrifying. But
yeah, maybe if you realize that younger, maybe that's helpful in some ways, you know.
Yeah Continue. So Ashley, what are some of the lessons you've learned, like, since, I mean, you were diagnosed pretty young, so this it says since your diagnosis, but you were diagnosed when you were a little baby, so I guess, like, what are some of the lessons you've learned, like, as you've grown into the condition and kind of, like, seen how it plays out in your life? Like, what are some of the lessons you've learned?
Yeah, I mean, I think asking for help is important, because I think especially in the beginning, you don't really know what you're asking for, but sometimes you're just like, man, I'm overwhelmed, you know? And I think it's good to let the people in your life know that. And I mean, I think mental health is super important. And I think, like, it's probably impossible if you have a chronic illness to not have, you know, some sort of issues, or if you have a chronic illness, I think therapy is always beneficial. And I think therapy is useful to seek out, like, before you really are in a dire situation, because it's like the therapist ideally should know who you are before you're in a crisis situation. So even, like, ideally, if you could get therapy before dialysis, which is, like, I mean, that's a lot of steps, but I think it's important to kind of think about that, because sometimes when we're in, like, really bad depression, we don't really think about seeking help. So, like, when we're feeling good, it's always good to kind of, like, just, you know, let people know how you're doing. And yeah, I think just, like, YOLO, life is short, you know. Like, and maybe a good thing, like, if you have to, you know, trying to be positive, like, a good thing about, I think, having a chronic illness is, man, like, I had no false illusion of, like, life, you know what I mean? And it's like, maybe I was forced to have goals quite early and, like, have a sense of, like, who I was. And I think a lot of people with chronic illness kind of, like, develop their personalities quite early, you know, because it's like they're forced to deal with quite, you know, really big questions and, like, really big issues in life.
Yeah, I definitely can agree to that and attest to that one, because, like, having to deal with issues like insurance and, like, medication, I have had to deal with that since I was diagnosed, like, what was it, like, 12 years ago. So it's almost like a level of, like, forced maturity. Like, you have to understand how some of these systems work and how some of these systems affect you, systems being stuff like insurance and government aid and Medicare, Medicaid, stuff like you mentioned before, the Affordable Care Act. Like, you have to understand that at a much younger age sometimes than you really want to.
Probably know more about insurance than, like, any of your classmates, you know?
Yeah.
To be 18 and have to know is a lot, you know? And hopefully, like, I mean, it's a little helpful since at least you're under your parents, but, like, you know.
It's almost like terrifying that like I it's like that like getting closer and closer to when I'll need to be on my own on that, like that's terrifying. but at least I'm like aware of that's coming up, and that there's like coming up in like 7 years. But
you know, I know I sound old, but like things really have gotten a lot better, because like I remember, I mean, I think it was right before dialysis, like this was like right before ACA passed or something, but like things were just dramatically different. Like I had to like really graduate soon to get insurance because like I wouldn't be able to be under my parents. And like at the time it was like, if you're 22, you had to be out.
Oh, which wow.
Wild to think about, you know, but at least there's options now. And like I say, Affordable Care Act, in my opinion, isn't affordable, but like at least it's access that, you know, you didn't necessarily have before.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like, yeah. And like a lot of these things that are like small things that are covered under like huge and expensive insurance companies, you have to pay for the huge expensive insurance. And I feel like the ACA like provides just another option.
Yeah.
From what I understand.
And from the main thing for ACA is just like, it provides you insurance, and like, you know, if you had a pre-existing condition before, you couldn't get insurance, you know? So I see it as like, especially if you ever want to own a business, it's so much easier now. Like before, I mean, I went to school for business and I had an entrepreneurship scholarship, but like at the time they couldn't really tell me anything, because they were just like, yeah, I mean, you are right. Like, we don't know what you would do, you know? Cause it's like, at the time they really didn't know. I mean, like they kind of gave me like advice, but like they had no idea, you know? So yeah. I mean, things are getting a lot better, and it doesn't seem like that because it's still mediocre at best, if that, you know, but I have hope, at least, you know, maybe it'll, I don't want to get too political, but maybe universal healthcare, you know, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, under a Democratic president, so it's always on the table. With that, and he was under Obama when that passed, so
yeah,
it's probably been on his mind since then.
I definitely think of more affordable access, hopefully, is in the future, you know.
Mm-hmm. And even like in upping like Social Security and Medicaid, and making sure like people who are the ones getting it are the ones that actually need it. So that's the main issue with those programs, with not Medicaid but Social Security disability, people are following it for the wrong reasons.
And one thing that kind of terrifies me is like, I look at disability, and I have some friends on disability, and it's like so little, and you can't make much more than that, or you don't get disability. So it's like, I don't know, it's better than nothing, you know, because we probably had nothing, but like, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of a sad thought, you know?
Yeah. One of my previous guests talked about it, and she was like, it's basically just forced poverty. And that's sad, but they upped it, I think, recently, but only by like $300 extra or something like that.
It seems very low.
Yeah. And I understand like a lot of it comes from taxpayer money, but also like we're paying like people, that this regular Social Security, like all of those people are like, we're all paying it. So like, I don't know. I have yet to totally understand how it works, but I kind of understand how it works. But it's just like, how can we make it so that everybody is included, but also not people aren't abusing it? Because people have abused it for a long time.
I don't know, honestly, anything really about disability other than like it's low. But I mean, to my understanding, it's like I work into disability, right?
Yeah. So you have to like have like certain amount of like work credits.
So, I mean, I get that it's like taxpayers, but I mean, it's also like my money, but it's just hard because it's like, you have to wait for it to be anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know what I mean? And then it's like, well, I don't know. I don't really know much about disability, but it seems like you have to like if I'm 33 getting disability, like I've only worked into it for not that long.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it can't be much, you know, I don't know.
It just seems a little twisted.
Oh, for sure.
But that's a whole other conversation for another time that I could talk for like hours about,
There's these like with when I'm meeting people for college, one of the like little like prompts you can put on like a profile is like something you could talk about for hours. And I was really tempted to put something like that because I feel like I could talk about these types of things for hours because of these interviews and learning these things.
That's great. Especially it's nice to see. Now I'm gonna sound old again, but it's nice to go on TikTok and see people's like, I think it's cool to check out like kind of what the younger demographic does on TikTok. And you know, I find some very interesting opinions, and yeah, I find that it's a lot of younger people are more political than sometimes I expect.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of cool to see like people on TikTok and like Instagram like explaining some of these things, and like you learn some of these things like you never knew about, or even just like different like viewpoints. Especially like one of the things I've learned is like different like language to use with like the disability community, and like certain words like what and what not to say. And like I've learned like that that's a whole new like thing I didn't even know like was like a sensitive, like not a sensitive topic, but like they get very specific about it, and I find it interesting. And it's not something you would think about, but they get like very like educational and specific on like what they prefer. It's interesting. Like that. Yeah,
I can see that. Yeah, there's probably, I don't really know the appropriate vernacular or words to use, but yeah, that is interesting.
Mm-hmm. And it's helped because like I have a cousin who has a disability, so like it's interesting because I'm able to like relay that information to like my grandparents and my aunt, and because he's now at the age of like he's more aware of his surroundings and like what his disability entails, which is awesome because he's a very curious little kid. Little, even though he's like almost 10, he's growing up so fast, but like it was around the same time, like,
educate others.
Yeah, you know? And it's like, and like the effect isn't just of the person who's viewing it, in this case like me or you or whoever's on TikTok and Instagram seeing these things. It's like it reaches out to an effect to a level that we can't even like imagine.
Yeah, I think it, you know, reaches a different target demographic as well. So yeah, it's cool to see.
Mm-hmm. So focusing on the cystinosis, we're gonna take a little break, and then we're gonna focus on the Cystinosis Awareness Day, which is the purpose for this episode, after the break. And we are back. So Ashley, so Cystinosis Awareness Day is this Saturday, May 7th, which is very exciting. We love our individual awareness days for individual rare diseases. So in your opinion, what does that mean? Like what do you plan on doing, and what does awareness look like to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of that is just, you know, posting about it, like letting my friends and family know. You know, I think sometimes we don't necessarily talk about it all the time. We don't want to identify it as our disease, but I think there's probably a lot of people that don't even know that I have cystinosis, you know, and I think it's especially important to people that are younger, you know, that maybe they, you know, don't see enough positive examples, or people that maybe are working or like doing well in their lives, you know, pretty healthy. So I think it's good to show examples of that and kind of like give hope to people that, you know, maybe there's parents that just found out that their kid has it. You know, I try to think about stuff like that. So yeah, I'm just planning to post it and definitely promote the fact that I have cystinosis more than anything.
Mm-hmm. And how has that come up at all, like in like your life, like even back in like high school and college, or like even as you're an adult, like how does that conversation ever come up with like friends, with like, I guess like your family knows. So I guess like with friends, with colleagues, like how does that conversation usually come up? Sometimes it won't ever come up, but how does that usually come up like in your daily life?
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably came up when I was in school, because I would have to take a lot of breaks to take medicine. And so it was like, I had to bring that up. And I think I'm pretty honest with my friends now, but at the same time, I try to paint it in a positive way. And I think sometimes, you know, it's hard to explain to somebody with like being real with them with like how serious it is, because I it's hard to say, but I think you might experience that as well. A lot of people, when they look at you, they're like, you're not sick, or like they have a different idea of what a sick person is. So mm-hmm. it's kind of just like letting people know, you know, there's various kinds of people with chronic illness, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And like, there's not like one like look to it, because that's a very common comment I feel like a lot of people get, is like, is either about like the look or the age. Like people are always like, you're too young to have something. I've gotten that like once before from a doctor, actually. It was like, she doesn't have this. Wow. She's like 6 years old. So that was comforting. And I guess, but shows to them that I have it, but
yeah, just, doctors can be the worst.
Yeah. Especially because like, it's just so hard to find. Like, I feel like I've been blessed because I'm in a location where there's a lot of professionals in the area of like sleep medicine, but it's hard to find specialists for literally anything, I feel like, because I feel like there's just so many nuanced disorders, and so like some that are like ultra rare. I don't know how rare cystinosis is, but like there are some that are like sub 1,000 patients, and it's hard to like go with like treatments and clinical trials and groups to go from there. So like, awareness is the best thing you can do.
Yeah.
In some instances.
So I looked this up, so I'm not misquoting. Cystinosis is thought to affect about 2,000 people worldwide, including approximately 500 people in the United States. So pretty low.
Oh, so that's like ultra rare.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know the exact definition, but I mean, it's a very rare.
Mm-hmm. Besides your sister, have you met anybody else? I guess you went to like conferences and stuff like that. Like, have you like stayed in contact with those people, or do you just like?
Yeah, it's funny because actually where I'm at in Kansas, of all places, have a lot of people that like a cluster. I mean, it's not a lot, like
relatively. You know, but
more than most areas. So like we have some like doctors that are pretty, you know, well known in the field, I guess, here. But yeah, I mean, I kept in touch with some of them from the yearly summit type things that I go to. And a lot of it is like, I mean, so much. We have a Facebook group. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think it's really useful. I feel like I've learned a lot. I kind of see, you know, if someone's having a similar problem, you know, people have useful advice. So I think it's a really tight community, and it's a lot of really interesting people that I become friends with so far. And, you know, I'm able to like see how they're doing in life and kind of root for them.
Mm-hmm. And how is like your sister, has your relationship with sister like now as you're older? I realized I kind of asked about that like earlier when you were growing up, but like, how is that now? Like with the somewhat positive direction of the knowledge of cystinosis and like research, and how is like that, like how's your relationship with your sister now with the hope of that comes with your condition?
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty close. I feel like we've probably gotten closer since when we were younger, which mm-hmm. you know, hopefully is the case with most people. It's been interesting because it's like we've kind of had different paths in life, you know, but we've luckily both, we had a transplant around the same time, and we've just, knock on wood, been very healthy since. So like, I think it's, you know, talking to her, I'm just very grateful that we're both doing so well. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're both able to live a pretty normal life right now. Like, you know, we're able to have a pretty healthy, normal relationship. And right now she actually moved to Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And she moved like, I actually, maybe 3-4 years ago. So that's been interesting, but it's been, you know, really kind of cool to see her living her life since her transplant and all that.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
I like to like lead with this, but I introduced her and her now fiance.
Oh, that's so cute. Wait, how did that happen?
Well, I mean, it actually wasn't, I wasn't like introducing them like, you guys need to get married, but yeah. I did introduce them just like as friends, and they got along and started dating.
Oh, that's so cute. Like,
you guys, your happiness is because of me. So
matchmaker here. who needs match.com and Tinder when you got assist, that's what this is for.
I'm waiting on Allison to help me, but we'll see.
And how has the relationship with your parents been, because of the fact that it's genetic, and obviously that can bring some joy, some like mixed feelings. I feel like with genetic disorders, it's always like it can bring about some tense emotions, I feel like, sometimes, because of, and not even with just parents, like with parents to children and like parents to like future generations. It's like, how is that dynamic played out because you have a genetic disorder?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we just had to go through like the traumas and stuff of having that. But, you know, I feel like my parents did a pretty good job of like really treating us pretty normally. Like, you know, we didn't really know we were sick until we really like, you know, needed a transplant kind of thing. So I feel like that's good. I mean, I honestly don't think that the chronic illness played a huge role in our parenthood, even though I'm sure there's ways, you know, that I don't know. I feel like my parents, if anything, maybe were a little more, like, I don't say controlling, but, you know, like they watched over us a little more. Obviously, mm-hmm. they're probably a little more worried about us than like maybe regular children. Mm-hmm. So there's probably that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because I know like there are some conditions that that are obviously also genetic, where there was a woman I interviewed about this time last year, actually, where she was taking care of her mom because they had the same condition. So that can bring about a new sense that they can bring about and like a different type of relationship, and also like worrying about passing it down to future generations, because obviously it's genetic. So I know like that can play a role in like the dynamics, not like a huge role, but just
yeah,
because,
I mean,
yeah,
I think it's different because it's like my mom doesn't really have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I think it would be hard. Like, I think it's hard seeing people with my disease not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
But since my parents have the recessive gene, you know what I mean? It's like, they really aren't related to cystinosis at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there's a better answer for that. But I'm not sure.
You're fine. I mean, it's different because they don't have it. So,
yeah,
they're doing their normal parenting job. It's just, it just so happened that they had this gene, and it manifested in you and your sister.
Yeah.
And how, I had a question and I blanked on it. Oh, where does it go from here with the genetics? Like, how, cause you and your sister both have it. Like, how does that manifest later on if kids were to come into the picture? Like, how does that play out?
So I believe that if like you and your partner could get tested if you have I think the main gene. So mm-hmm. I would have to test my partner if they have the recessive gene,
okay.
Which you can do now, like if you know exactly what to test for.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. I feel like children are like scary. So I mean, yeah. I'm not too worried about that, but
yeah.
If someone wanted to, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of people populating with my disease, because it's like, it's a long thing. You might have to not take medicine.
Oh,
when you get
yeah.
pregnant. So I don't know. There's some people that I think have had healthy pregnancies, but they don't necessarily advise it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a gray area.
Yeah. That would make sense. Cause there's not much about the disease. Not like
it's
there's stuff.
It's like we take a lot of medicine.
Oh, okay.
So it's just like having to go without that for a certain time, I imagine, would be pretty bad. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That does not sound fun at all. Having to like not take meds.
I'm a dog mom right now, and that's
yeah.
quite a bit of responsibility. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I know like, I feel like the common like thread in a lot of these conditions is whether it is 100% known that it's genetic, or for me at least, I don't know if I had it passed down or if I'm just like, oh, you have it, like your body just was like built different. so like it, I know like those with the chronic illness, rare disease community, like wondering where to go next, especially with like families and stuff like that, that can be a common thread. But that's not sound fun to like not be off of meds for 9 months.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hopeful about certain things. Like there's, I think there's like 5 people now that have had stem cell transplants.
Oh.
Yeah. And like, I think the 5th one, it's either 4 now or all 5. Like they haven't had to take medicine since the stem cell. Yeah.
How so, does I mean, that work?
I really don't know anything about it. Other than like they were looking for people that were interested in doing the stem cell, which I wasn't ready to like risk my life for that. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like,
yeah,
I have so much admiration for the people that did do the stem cells because like you have to be pretty healthy. Like I thought at first, well, maybe it's people that like, you know, like have a bigger chance to take, but mm-hmm. it's like, you have to be really healthy, I think, to be able to do that. And it's like, you're risking your life, but like they have all been very lucky. And I think all of them that have done it. And again, it's a very small or very rare disease. So like mm-hmm. 5 people doing a stem cell transplant is quite big.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have a lot of, you know, a lot of hope in the future for that.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. Cause I never would have thought that like stem cell transplant would be in the picture, but I guess that kind of makes sense because you're doing some type of transplant almost regardless. So the stem cell would.
Yeah. I mean, it's like related to the cysteine or, you know, whatever we lack in that amino acid. But yeah, I mean, it's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. I never would have connected those two, but that's awesome though, that like has been successful too.
Yeah.
So even more hope down the line.
Yeah, good. For sure.
It's good. The pandemic's still around and it's still there. It's still prevalent, but even though it's kind of like, at least in my area, it's dialed down a little bit. But it's been over 2 years, and I'm gonna ask you, how has the pandemic affected living with rare disease for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the beginning I was super paranoid. Like I was living, before I was living in Kansas, I was living in Austin, Texas for a little bit, and it was just a lot bigger city. So it just freaked me out, like being in such a big place, mm-hmm. You know, hearing about the deaths in the beginning. So yeah, I mean, I think I just have been more anxious than normal. It's been hard for me. I'm an extrovert, so it's been hard not to, you know, be as extroverted as I'd like to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. I feel like a lot of people have realized how extroverted or introverted they are, or like have switched. I've heard a lot of stories of people like realizing that like they were extroverted like before, wouldn't mind like going out, and then they realized like how they like want their alone time.
I've kind of realized, you know, recharging is nice. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt like I didn't really recharge too much.
Yeah.
So I definitely can sense that.
Yeah, I feel like there's, for me at least, like I realized like I have a social battery, like it exists and I like to be with people, but if I couldn't do like big crowd of people, like with people I don't know. If I'm with someone I know, like that's a little bit different, but like
I get you.
I've learned like I can recharge for a little bit, but like after like a certain amount of time I get bored with wanting to recharge and be with myself, but also sometimes I like value that alone time. Like I'm just like right in the middle. I'm right in the middle. Like I'm not either or, I feel like, but that's what the pandemic at least has taught me.
Like is that know your limit a little bit.
Yeah. It's like, it's almost like a moment by moment basis. Cause I like some days are like, I would like to be around people. And then some days I'm like, I'd rather just read a book in my room or just like watch TV by myself. It's just, it's a day by day basis.
I'm the same way. And then I like plan all these events and then it's like, oh, do I feel like going to that today?
Yeah. And it's like after one, you're like, why do I have 5 more planned for the rest of the month? Like, why am I packing my schedule?
Exactly.
Yeah. I realized how limited at least probably just because mixed my narcolepsy and senioritis, but of my social battery, it's expanded a little bit, but there are times when I'm surprised at how low it can get, you know?
I totally feel that. I think especially like new people, you know, like starting that conversation can be kind of hard at first.
Yeah, and almost like exhausting at sometimes and like intimidating, especially I mean, I love when conversations go well with new people, and like it goes, and like when you go on tangents on your first conversation with somebody, it's probably a good sign that like you have stuff in common. But like once it's after a while, I'm like, I need my person that I know. Like I need just like a break. I need a water break or something. Like that's just how I feel about that. Like sometimes it's just
I mean, there's definitely an energy depleting when you talk to someone, even if it's like good or bad, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pandemic has definitely like affected, I feel like, everyone's social skills. Like we're all just doing things differently, and it's I don't like being the guinea pig ever, but like society is just a guinea pig right now, and I don't necessarily like it.
Yeah,
but it has turned into interesting things. So
I agree.
So
me watching TikToks right now.
I mean, being able to do this, like this is just normal for people now. This was my entire school year last year. Was Zoom every other day, but it gets old. It gets old, but it's, oh my gosh, even 2 years ago it was a fever dream. Like it was every day for the last
quarter. So exhausting.
It is. I was watching videos or on a Zoom for every one of my classes when we were shut down, and it's just like
that's so hard to like wake up excited, I think.
Yeah, after, especially last year, after a while I was like, I want my 5 day. As much as like the homework load would be a pain, I want my 5 day week back, and I do have it back now, but then I'm switching to a college schedule next year. So it's like, I was really thrown for a loop there, wasn't I?
Well, hopefully you'll be able to start college like COVID free almost, you know?
Yeah, hopefully. I'm assuming so, but
yeah,
we'll see.
It's getting better.
Fingers crossed. My final question for you, Ashley, I ask every single one of my guests this at the very end of every episode, but why do you want to tell your story?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people have gone through something with health. Like maybe not everybody has a rare chronic illness, but I think when we tell our stories, it's like we humanize ourselves, and you know, I think it's good to be vulnerable. Because I think a lot of times people are scared to talk about their own issues, and, you know, they feel alone or they feel alienated. So I think just telling your story really helps them.
Mm-hmm. And it helps unite people who didn't think that they needed uniting, didn't think they had anything. They might even not have anything wrong with them. Not wrong, but like, not, that sounds terrible, but like, it might not have like a condition or have something up with mental health, which it's totally normal. Like that is okay to not have 100% mental health. It is Mental Health Awareness Month after all too. So like, yeah, I would look that up earlier and I was like, oh, it's Mental Health Awareness Month. But yeah, it's just good to like unite, like stories unite people more than you think. And humanizing, it's the right word. It humanizes these big words like cystinosis.
And I think just like, you know, when I learned about other people's struggles, and I think learning about other people's issues and like health conditions, it makes me realize like, you know, this isn't really that bad. Like we all have something, you know, and we're all like learning from each other.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We all learn and we all grow together too, in one way or another, whether we see it or like it or not, we're all doing this together. Even if we don't realize it.
It's a good way to put that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Ashley.
Well, thank you for having me.
Of course. Of course. And happy early Cystinosis Awareness Day.
Well, thank you.
Of course. Of course. To all my listeners out there, Cystinosis Awareness Day is May 7th. So be sure to check out the Cystinosis Awareness Network and their Instagram. And apparently they have some surprise coming out that day, according to their Instagram. So be sure to stay tuned to what they have in store for this Saturday, May 7th. Be sure to follow me on Instagram at rishrarepodcast. And I will have all of Ashley's information in the show notes below. And yeah, be sure to subscribe to stay tuned for next week's episode. And see you guys then. Bye, everyone.
See you.